My name is Aleksandra Kędziorek, and I will have a pleasure to moderate this meeting with Ivan Blasi, who is joining us from Barcelona, from the Miss Van der Rohe Pavilion. And Centrala, who is joining us from Krakowskie Przedmieście, so just around the corner, who is also responsible, together with me, for this little outdoor exhibition and three water lily pots, aquatic plant pots that are there in the corner. And our idea for today is that we will start by showing you a little short film that we have done together with Miss Van der Rohe Foundation 2 years ago, when we started a process of reintroducing water lilies to the Miss Van der Rohe Pavilion, and a few images of other architectural pieces where lilies are missing. And together with Ivan, Gosia and Simone, we will discuss what it meant to reintroduce water lilies to this architectural icon. And later, if you have time, you can also join us for a little tour around this small open-air exhibition, when we'll tell you a little bit more about why water plants are so interesting for us and what we can do more with them. So I will start by pushing the button. I hope you see well on the screen. It's very short. It has English, mostly it's in English, but has English subtitles as well.
Thank you.
And this film shows a beginning of a process that started in 2022. But as you see, at the very beginning already, there were some new inhabitants in the pavilion that we will discuss in a moment. But first, I would like to ask Gosia and Simone about how it like began for you, because your interest in water plants began even earlier than this, and you can maybe you can tell why you became interested in them, and what kind of knowledge you brought to Mies van der Rohe Pavilion with you that made this reintroduction possible. You have the other.
In 2018, we presented the exhibition Amplifying Nature in Polish Pavilion in Venice. And that exhibition was created by us as a like an aquatic display. We had no ideas about water plants at the time, and we, our exhibition was invited by the algas in 3 days. We understood that we can use some like a water pool technologies, or we can start to cooperate with the aquatic plants. It didn't happen in Venice. It happened here in front of the Zachęta. We created our first aquatic plant spot. It was standing there next to the steps. And this is how it happened. This is how we started to be water gardeners. We understood the power of water plants in first seasons, that all our fears was not like addressed, I don't know.
I think that like also while making the research for Amplifying Nature, we stumbled upon a picture that is actually printed on this first sale here, which was like this kind of exactly that pot, the planter, but with like a very cryptic caption that just didn't mention like any author or any program for the like a intervention for as an sort of like a network of elements or water bodies in the city. So, but this picture was suggestive enough to venture and investigating like the possibilities that this picture could offer to the city. And somehow I think that this reading the history of the city always helps us in projecting possible future scenarios, like in this case.
And then we had that lens. We work a lot with their hives, so we started to notice that water plants were everywhere, like seriously, everywhere. In Warsaw, Simone cataloged like 35 modernistic buildings where water lilies are still missing. We're showing some of the examples here on the exhibition, but we prepared as well a few slides from other very known places that we would like to share with you. Those are our dreams. We hope that the next steps of the project could like recreate the aquatic plants in those places. Maybe you can describe the places because I don't see the screen.
Oh yeah, maybe Ola, you can say then.
I will tell what images we have here, and you will also tell a bit more, because there are not all the places. Yes, there's a UNESCO garden in Paris by Isamu Noguchi, but I think there were some trials to reintroduce. Yes, it is there. We have some examples from exhibition architecture, which is this one is actually not there anymore. Yes, so this is... one moment. Niemeyer, yes, Niemeyer and Costa, yes, pavilion in New York in the 1930s. And this is our biggest dream, to turn Giardini into Giardini again. some examples we are collecting from Venice Biennale, yes, with Austrian Pavilion, which is the nicest place, and the monument that all of us being in Venice, we are passing every day, which is Garibaldi, yes, so that there are also some lilies there. At least there are some signs of what, like this infrastructure for gardening, yes, but maybe we can stop with Giardini, but you can tell like more about those places where they're missing.
But like in Warsaw or in the world in generally? We realized that like there was a sort of a metabolic rift in which at a certain point chlorine and electrical pumps kind of substituted our nature-based solutions, which are aiding the presence of water plants. Water was kept just clean, naturally clean. So this is what we believe created this interruption in the history, and we went on mapping places both in Warsaw and abroad, and the one in Warsaw are connected with like the most various water bodies you can imagine, from ponds in public parks such as the Ogrodzaski just nearby us, to didactic tools in the on the very courtyard of the Faculty of Architecture as a tool for architects to learn how to deal with hydrobotany already from the times of studies, or ponds just present in between a block of flats here in the new town of Warsaw on Duga Street, or in larger housing estates, so basically even the one restored in the Lyceum in Batorego. So in Warsaw we have like a various array of water bodies, and some of them are kind of trying to recover the knowledge of water plants, such as the Batorego Lycée, but in public parks seems to be a challenge too big to confront, and we like to, in fact, to, you know, to do it, just the municipality open to this.
So maybe we'll move to Ivan now, because this was a very brave decision to accept Centrala's proposal to introduce water plants to the pavilion again, because there are thousands of tourists coming there every day. They just want to see the pavilion as it always looks, yes, in a very always the same as they know them from books, postcards, internet, and so on. So why did you decide to do that? And what were the challenges that you faced?
So first of all, thank you very much for the invitation. And to be short, one of the most important things was that originally when the pavilion was rebuilt in 1986, the architects decided that that water area would be shallower, so not as deep as it was originally. And we never got a clear answer. I'm not sure if you got it from Fernando Ramos, one of the architects in the reconstruction of why they did it. But probably it was because many of the water features in Barcelona and in many other places had kind of disappeared because institutions, politicians, and so on were sometimes kind of afraid of diseases, of mosquitoes, and so on. So, well, you know much more about it in general, but that could have been one of the reasons why they decided not to put the water lilies, which had been there originally, to make it shallower. It's only 25 centimeters deep, and to put pebbles, stones, on the bottom, so that it would look more Japanese somehow, but without any reason behind that decision. So, and to put chlorine inside. So actually, until the water lilies were put back, when you went there, it smelled like a swimming pool. It was really chlorine. And this is an interesting part of the city because it's Montjuic, this hill, which is a pretty big green area for the city of Barcelona, where there are many parks and gardens. There's some water features, fountains, but also some ponds, and all of them really smell of chlorine. And then in around 2007, there was a test with one of the previous directors, in which we put square pots made out of glass, and there were water lilies put inside of them. But chlorine had to remain outside of these pots. So that water was clean, the water lilies grew, but as soon as the leaves grew too much, they would burn and they would die, so the image was pretty terrible. So they were swiped away. Actually, they are still alive because one of the workers of the pavilion, Alex, has them at home. So they've survived over the years. We didn't throw them away. We also have the glass boxes. But in any case, that was a test that some people kind of remembered about them. And then it came back to kind of chlorine once again. And I would say that maybe in 2020 with the COVID and kind of having it all completely kind of empty, no visitors in the city, no visitors in the pavilion either. And when we went there, it was not many of us, just the workers that we could go around. And you could hear all the birds, and you could, and the nature had kind of tried to recover a little bit because nobody had touched it. That had changed, or at least we were more aware maybe after those months. But it still smelled of chlorine. So I think that you also arrived at a perfect moment in which there was already this kind of will to, because it had been discussed, the possibility, but it had to be somebody from outside, you know, from another country that finally kind of made us go forward with this transformation of the pool.
And in frame of an art installation, which is always helping, because if it fails, then it's just that was an experiment, yes, but it goes on. It, we said 1 year, but it's still there, and they are growing very nicely. So the experiment went well, but it also was a challenge because it meant like losing control. Yes, it was like a step by step resigning from this chlorine. It was quite a process, but it was for us very encouraging to observe how everyone decided to take part in it. But it's important not only because the maintenance of the pavilion changed, yes, because you have to take care of this pool in a different way, but also the reading of the pavilion, yes, it changes quite a lot when you stop thinking about the pool as a surface, as it was usually read in Mies van der Rohe legacy, yes?
Yeah, maybe what I can add is that something that's nice, we're a public institution, part of the City Hall of Barcelona, and all the workers there are part of the team, so it's not kind of external. So everybody working at the pavilion, selling tickets, selling books, or also the gardener, Ruth, for example, they all got really involved in it, and they were checking constantly, sending photos of how it evolved. The first year was pretty difficult because the Mediterranean climate and the Mediterranean waterfront is kind of always showing very much all the changes that have to do with climate. So or the droughts can become very, very strong, or there can be very strong storms and so on. And the water shallower, so it gets kind of very warm as well. But they were always kind of keeping or taking care of the plants and so on, and also informing the visitors. But nobody ever complained. Actually, people were surprised. The first year we had information so that people would understand why the water was totally green, although nobody really was afraid other than ourselves at the institution, because what will happen if people see the water, which is green, and they don't see the pebbles instead, and they see some plants, but the plants were not in its their best conditions at the beginning. But actually, people were kind of interested and happy to see at least one flower. And now, once we kind of saw or found with the biologists and the people involved, I mean, the specialist ways to solve, to call it somehow, this issue of transparency, you know, this kind of discussion on the aesthetics, if the transparency of the water brings a different obvious aesthetics, but we don't know how it looked like in 1929. All the photos are in black and white, so you don't really see how it looked like back then. And also, at the beginning, we put water lilies, but finally, we've been able to also put some vertical plants, which also are visible in the photos from 1929, which at the beginning, we were fighting to have some vertical, but it's a slow process, no? And that, I mean, yeah, I mean, that brings many kind of important issues, because finally the dragonflies now have elements on which to hatch and to kind of transform from the shell to become larvae, and finally the dragonflies. And before that, they were trying to do the same kind of process on the walls, but we were just commenting this, that the walls of travertine, which are beautiful and so on, but they're not perfect for dragonflies because they kind of are born and they slip and they fall into the water and they die. So you have to find other kind of ways to make this kind of ecosystem work well. And the other one was also putting or changing the water system so that now we have water entering the pond from two points, not from one, and circulating, so it moves all the time. And this becomes better for the plants, for the oxygenation as well, and also avoids mosquitoes. But it also is done kind of avoiding the larvae from the mosquitoes with some of the plants. But you know better, and you will probably explain that in those parts. But we also have frogs, we have ducks, seagulls. Yeah, unfortunately, the ducks, last year the family came. It was the mother, the father, and three ducklings. But they liked the water lilies too much. And that meant that or they ate them or they destroyed them pretty bad. So this year when one of them, I'm not sure it was the father or the mother, he came alone and we had to scare him or her away so that we can still have the water lilies. But what is nice is that it seems the biologist, what he told us, Carlos, is that one of the water lilies was, one of the ducks was playing with the water lilies and he probably, or she just kind of let it go. And now one of the water lilies is growing from the stones, not from the pots that we put, but directly from the stones. So all the plants are really adapting to very different conditions, let's call it like that.
Yes, and there are some new visitors, new inhabitants, yes. But also, as you said, it's not that everything could be planned in that. And with this, I wanted to ask Gosia and Simone about the process of designing a water garden for Miss Wanderer Pavilion, because I remember, for me as well, it was quite an experience, yes, very moving, yes, but also challenging, because you had to break from the logic of Miss Wanderer.
And yeah, we were like typical architects at the beginning. We were dreaming about, like, you know, to have a total control. So I'm even like sharing that on that movie that we even draw some grid for them to grow on. And we put the pots on the grid. Even we were like measuring some stuffs on the way. But of course, this is what is for us the most valuable lesson. As architects, we need to let the control go away, yeah. So this is what we get from water plants, and it's we are very happy about that now. But there are some thoughts, some threads that we discussed on the way that I hope that one day we will be able to come back to them. Because we understood that the topic of water lilies is so connected to the history of the architectural exhibitions and as well to the this post-colonial discourse now, that somehow we really would like to first to share what we know about that history. Some scraps are presented here on the exhibition, but as well that there is so many possibilities that, for example, there are some nocturnal pieces, so we can have different actors in the pavilion during the day and during the night. And we think, and I still believe, that the choice of the green stone with the white patches on next to the pool is somehow, you can see it as a possible conversation with the nocturnal water plants, white water plants. And yeah, so we think that it's not just about rewilding the ponds in architecture. It's not only like coming back to these nature-based solutions, but to see the architectural language in that cooperation with hydrobotany, we calling it.
Maybe just to add to the answer to your question about the stress of doing something at the with an icon of architecture, it was like indeed extremely stressful, but on the other hand also liberating, because if you think that like your sort of holy gods can be touched, and not only they can be touched, they can be an example for other places which are considered like untouchable and could become a beacon of like greater transformation. And this is like, I think we had like a conversation lately regarding the subject of urgency, like that these changes are urgent and needed, and places like the Barcelona Pavilion can be this this moment that demonstrate that radical changes can happen, and if they can happen there, maybe can happen like in everywhere, in a sense. So I think that this was stress was overcome immediately by like hopefulness and an extreme like sense of joy that like this can be modified. Like, I think that what Carla says in the movie, for me, is the most important sentence, that like every single water body, it's a possibility. And this shows that.
And this pavilion can become an embassy for solutions that's like used also on other places. I will have two more questions, but you can start thinking about the questions you might have, because after that I will pass the mic around the audience, so we can also have a possibility to ask what is maybe most interesting for you. First to Ivan, about the arts installation programs, because it's this action with the water lilies. It's quite unique that because it's like it's already two years, yes, and it seems that it as long the lilies are happy, it will stay there. But recently, with different art installations, you are somehow exploring this this idea of thinking about architecture in this with this interspecies perspective, yes, or broadening the understanding of Mies van der Rohe architecture with a more contemporary approach. So maybe you can tell about the context in which this art installation sits now.
So when the pavilion was rebuilt, as it was not the original, the idea was that it would be always a place which would have activity happening, an activity on researching about what's going on around us, what's affecting, and how architecture, landscape architecture, urban planning and so on has to be thought about and at another scale, no, before going to decisions on a larger scale, probably like the pots here on a smaller scale, to finally jump onto a larger scale projects. And so this, together with the EU MIS Awards, there was this idea of collaborating with people from the cultural world, from all different kind of perspectives that had thoughts and had been researching on different topics, that through the pavilion could kind of they could find ways of continuing this research, this discussion, and opening it up to everybody who was interested. So there have been from poets reading poetry to filmmakers to artists of all kinds, architects that transformed the pavilion. So from when you were, for example, you had this conversation with Andres Jaque, no? And he did this intervention which was called Mies as Rendered Society. And what he was putting on the floor, on the table, was that we have this rendered image of everything, no? Through Instagram, through pictures, through images, which is not, it's a reality or a possibility or an interpretation. But when we go to the Barcelona Pavilion, we wanted to see it as in the photos. And it's true that it happens more or less in the pavilion, because every day they clean the glass and there's no kind of finger kind of marks on the glass or on the steel. There's no leaves in the water. The stone is also cleaned every year, you know, with a cart or two, with high pressure water, so that all the travertine is, I don't know what, clean? But it's terrible. Yeah, but why do we need it? And it's true that you need to find a certain kind of also balance, because if we start, for example, something that would be nice, allowing all the animals and all to kind of make their nests inside the holes of the travertine and so on, there would be at a certain point probably some problems with maintenance and so on, because the walls are empty, are void inside. So we always have to find but it's true that it has helped us a little bit from these discussions with you, with Andres, or even the one with Anna Nozani back that covered the whole pavilion with white stickers. So all the materials that we see, the yellow marbles, the blue and green ones, or the travertine, the steel, everything was covered in white. So suddenly it was like an Apple store. Only the glass and the white surfaces. And it changed many perspectives. No, but one of the things that people started kind of criticizing and nearly insulting us or the artists was because the joints in the horizontal plan were not coincident with the vertical ones. And they were saying that we had made a reinterpretation of the pavilion, making new joints and whatsoever. And that's how it was from the very beginning, so that at some points the horizontal and the vertical joints do kind of follow up, but in some others they do not. And you would see it much more when everything was white and the joints were, let's say, the black. But just to say that, for me, is this was a way to put a certain pattern, a certain organization on the floor, on the horizontal plan, and then the water lilies or the walls or the pillars, they just came and they just kind of fell depending on another order of logics and so on. So these are kind of different people working on different kind of thoughts and discussions. This one was more on materiality, but it brings up issues that finally connect and allowed us to know a little bit more about us here.
So Centrala was also part of this discussion with this water lily intervention, but it's also you are also part of discussion here in the city by implanting water plant pots in different places, because those trees that are behind us are not the only ones in Warsaw. There are more in front of Palace of Culture, but there are also some in Kielce and Gdańsk. And maybe before we move to the questions from the audience, you can tell a little bit about this network of water ponds. How you imagine it further? Whether it should expand or it should be taken as a recipe and repeated individually? What will be your dream for the next steps?
About the network, I think that it's really important to say that, of course, water gardening is still gardening, so we need gardeners. And we found in many public institutions, Zachęta among them, of course, as a mother institution, many others that were willing to become water gardeners. And so this is how this network kind of exists. Other public museums, such as the Design Institute in Kielce, or the Nomus in Gdańsk, wonder if they could also do it. And we said, sure, of course you can do it, but you have to, you know, kind of follow this certain set of rules and take care of the pots. So I think that, or also institutions such as Bar Studio, which is not a public institution per se, but it's a para-public institution. So in a sense, like maintenance and care, it's fundamental in this activity, and anybody can just do it. So it isn't difficult. It is not really high maintenance. So I think that this brought a lot of courage. Also, Miasto Esnasze, like as an institution, tried themselves to do it, but somehow the community surrounding the pot kind of rioted a little bit against it. So there is like also maybe small cases of potential failure, but still this pot is actually now here, so it's like not all that bad. And regarding the plans for the future, I think the biggest ambition, you showed that on the slides, like reintroducing hydrobotany at the at the Venice Biennale in the gardens, but again a little bit as a beacon or as a, an embassy of a place where architecture is discussed that then can trigger a further discussion in other places, can be the seed that spreads through the world. And for and about Warsaw, like I think there is like a really good basis for public parks to start developing a policy of nature-based solution for water bodies that we are instilling on daily basis. So we hope that this would finally become a reality. I think that those are the two, let's say, strands of our future scenarios. I don't know, Gosha wants to add something.
I just wanted to add that those small pots, they opened up more questions. Now we're working with soil, with the quality of the soil. We just opened yesterday the small soil distributor in Wrocław because we understood that there is no soil policy in the city. So we have no sources for the pots. That we need more systems, to analyze more systems. It's about the quality of the water as well. If you want to start your own pot, you need to start with the lake water. You need to bring all this biome of the lake. You cannot start with the tap water. It's too clean. So it's not only about the system of pots or like other water bodies. It's about generally how to change the way of thinking about the like a circular participation of plants, animals and fungi as a partners to like co-create our cities. So this network we see, I mean, it's just growing.
I mean, just it's highly relational in a sense.
Yes. And if one of you would like to become a water gardener and learn from us, on 8th of August we will have a little workshop here because our aquatic plant pots will need some replanting and there will be some also some small plants to that you can also take with you. Yes. If I'm just talking, if anyone has some questions, yes.
That fine. Oh, okay. So, hello, my name is Tamara Winczek. I have a question about your cooperation with scientists and waterland scientists, biodiversity scientists, and others that, you know, they know a lot of things about plants and animals and can measure, you know, the impact, etc. Because, you know, there is a big biodiversity discourse. Also, it's also part of the European legislation, etc. So I just wanted to ask if this is only an architectural concept or do you cooperate with NGOs and scientists?
The whole process started with the idea of preservation of the an idea, like a recreation of the historical solution. We saw the now we know the design of Alina Scholz for this water plant pot. We saw one black and white picture, and we were thinking in frame of the reconstruction. But then we thought that it's about nature, so it's supposed to be connected to the reconstruction of nature as well. So we contacted in 2018 and we created that first pot with Madame Mellon. She was at the time the curator of the water plants of the at the Botanical Garden of the University of Warsaw. And actually all the plants, which are still some of them are with us, those are the protected species donated by the Biological Garden. And we started to think about all this process, and this is why we addressed that question to the foundation, because we thought that we can think that protection of the monuments or the like protected places from the architectural perspective can be as well like a places to reconstruct some small ecosystems, especially if they were designed in that way that they're supposed to be a component of the architecture. So this is that was like our first intuition. The people from our partners from the university, they were very fast with planting the first pot, for example. We needed much more time, a few cycles to learn what they already knew, and we understood that this knowledge is very embodied, that in different botanical gardens there is other like protocols. For example, we managed to obtain a small grant together with Ola, and we traveled through European botanical gardens, and we asked about, for example, how they solving the issue of mosquitoes. In every place there are different, like, I don't know how to call it, habits. They partnering with the different species to, for example, change the pH of the water. Here we are like basing most of our solutions on the written guides by Alina Scholz, because that was her pot. So we are like following her instructions. But in Barcelona, we cooperate with the local botanists who are like responsible for the local Catalonian lily. And that was the idea that we're supposed to think in the like scale of the local challenges. And think about different, sometimes it's about the plants, sometimes it's about the amphibians. So it's not, it's supposed to be somehow connected. Maybe Olak can say a few words about this scholarship that we used to travel, this Iportonus, because that was really like a moment that we really talked to specialists.
Yes, I can, because this is very very good, but also a very important question, because this interdisciplinary collaboration is crucial here. First thing is like, because we can learn from each other and it goes like every direction, yes, but it's also we already mentioned the challenge of losing control, of being more in the process. That was also a challenge. I remember that when you worked with some microclimatologists, they told you that you are thinking in a too static way. Yes, so there are some things that we don't know about ourselves. But when we are confronted with people from different disciplines, we can also learn. We did this we before doing the intervention in the Darnley installation in the Miss van der Rohe Pavilion. We got a grant to travel to, for example, Botanical Garden in Padova. That is like one of the oldest botanical gardens in Europe. But we also traced other examples of Miss van der Rohe architecture where water plants were part of it. Yes. So, for example, Tugendhat Villa. So it was also important for us to see it as a kind of pattern in the work of Miss van der Rohe and Lili Reich, because they worked together at this time, and explore this a little bit. Yes. Also to see with which gardeners they collaborated, because they're also somehow not present in the history, yes, but were very important part of the project, and what kind of knowledge outside of the architectural discipline they incorporated in those designs. Or maybe there's another question, because...
It's this nursery that we collaborated with, Tres Turons. They are in charge. Well, what they decided to do when they began is to preserve some of the species which are endangered in Catalonia, and also working with scientists to try to test and see if there's any endemic water lily, this white one, because they thought that there were two possible endemic water lilies, one from the north of Catalonia. They discovered that actually it was not, and now they're trying to see if one from the delta of the Ebro River would be. So they are constantly in touch, and Carles constantly asks scientists and other people for answers or possible solutions also when there's a need for answers at a very special moment as well, because Last year, for example, it was very hot in Barcelona. It was terribly hot. The lilies kind of survived pretty well. This year, right now in Barcelona, the temperature is like this, so it's very different from last year. So there's no water. So for example, when we were discussing about how all the water areas around this part of the city could start changing, maybe they could have more water lilies, because Parks and Gardens, the public institution responsible for the parks and the gardens of the city, is just next door, also over there. So they were also interested in kind of bringing back this kind of natural life to all. But now the problem is that most of them are empty. There's no water, so there's no ponds, and we are lucky because it's a monument and it's protected, so the water's still there. But there are changes that suddenly you have to address, and you have to ask all these different actors.
Any more questions? If not, we will slowly move to the second part of our meeting. And we will show you the open-air exhibition that we prepared and show you our aquatic plant pots that are there. But first, thank you so much for taking part in this conversation. We're very happy to have you here. And we can continue this discussion in without microphones, yes, next to the exhibition. Thank you so much.
Thank you.